I'm suiting up.
Welcome to Doctor 3, a Hearthstone podcast dedicated to giving you explosive growth and climbing the standard rank ladder. I'm your host, Staring Alkaline, and along with me are my fellow host, Nikolaius, and special guest host, Wicked Good.
Hey.
How you doing, Steve?
Good, how are you? Well, glad to be on the
show. Good, good.
First guest on this podcast.
Exactly. So, well, thank you for coming and making the time tonight.
Well, thank you for asking me. It's an honor, so I'm happy to be here.
Okay, so we're going to jump into last week's poll question. Given we are about to, we're about to get the second balance pass for Descent of Dragons, we want to know, how frequently do you think Team 5 should be adjusting cards during expansion? So, and our options were once per expansion, twice per expansion, monthly per expansion, or other. So the winner was monthly per expansion at 38.5%. Second place was 30.8%, two per expansion. One per expansion was 11.5%. And then there were a couple write-ins that were just balance it on as needed basis. So, yeah, I feel like the way they've been running, the monthly expansion's a little bit of, bias at this moment in time. So,
I mean, if it was planned monthly, like, maybe that would be a little bit better. Like, it's different when, like, I've been casting the Monkey Bubble Open Division. The Monkey Bubble's a tournament series that Bemi's doing, like, as like a mid-level Masters, like a level below, like the what people would get relegated into from Grandmasters if, like, they actually relegated people into something. And like, I spent 3 weeks prepping to do this first cast, and then, like, oh, yeah, day before. Oh, yeah, nerfs hit. Okay, well, throw all that out. We're figuring stuff out on the fly. Let's go. And it's like, you know, at least if you can plan around it, it might be a little bit better. But just, like, these, you know, oh, we're going to go 2-3 weeks, and then we have another patch, and then you just throw out everything. And I feel, and I, at least I can craft all the cards. Like, I feel bad for people who, like, put all their dust into Galakrond Shaman cards, and then, like, okay, well, what do I do now?
For sure. The only thing, like you said, they announced the patch and then it goes live a day later. So you don't even get any time to, like, they're just like, it's coming down the pipeline and then here it is, it's live.
Yeah, I think I agree. Like, if it was monthly, like, that's okay as long as it's something that's planned. These have just been like panic buttons, we have to fix something because our game is broken, and the less of that happens, the happier I am. So
yeah, and having in the middle of the month too, like when you're trying to grind, like, and then all of a sudden it just changes out from under you in the middle of it, like, that never feels good either.
No, yeah. It doesn't, because you're just like, I'm in the middle of a rank, what do I don't want to drop back to the floor. It's just like, makes me not want to play for 2 days while the meta gets figured out. So, speaking of the nerfs, we have the nerfs that came on 1.9 after they were announced on 1.8. First off, Fiendish Rites, the Warlock card, mana cost was increased from 3 to 4. I mean, okay.
This one kind of confuses me. Like, yeah. I wasn't playing a lot of the Warlock, and I get that it was a strong card in that deck, but at the same time, I'm still kind of confused. Like, I don't know. It didn't seem like it was egregiously strong. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think like two ones for 3 mana was like, outside of like a druid, felt like a little bit much. And like, I've been playing a lot of the warlock, like the non zoo warlock, like the you mean the Galakrond, like the no hands lock, right?
Yeah,
that's what you're talking about. Yeah, like I've been playing a lot of that. Like, I took that to Legend last month, and then I played a bunch of it after. And like, the curve is a little bit slower. Like, It does take a little bit of the edge off that deck, because you just had so many things to do on 3 that you could always get a curve. So this does kind of slow it down and make it a little bit more awkward. I don't know that it really needed it. Like, Zoo wasn't really in that tough of a spot, but it also was kind of stupid at 3 mana anyway. So, you know, I don't really have a problem with it.
So then we have one of the best ones, Science of Ruin Warrior, has been increased from 3 to 4.
Yeah, this one was kind of needed. It was pretty insane.
Yeah.
especially on, like, as early as turn 8, being able to play that with Barista, and then on turn 9, you can play, like, all three of them, essentially, if you needed to. And it was just kind of, like, impossible to take back the board at that point. So, forcing it to be slower is nice.
Yeah, and also you can't play Galakrond and play 2-7-6 or 3-7-6 Scions on the same turn. There's at least, like, a turn you have to take off to do that, which is nice.
Also
exactly.
True.
Yeah. So if you draw it, you don't get to just immediately slap it down. We have Ankar, durability reduced from 3 to 2, which I think is a really good, with the other changes like that needed, Ankar needed that as well.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was, you know, Pirate Warrior is an aggressive deck, and the big weakness of these kind of decks is supposed to be their card draw, and this would essentially give them 3 cards for free, and chances are one of them that you were going to draw was that pirate that re-equips the weapon, so that's like 3 more draws, and it can just really snowball from there. So having the mana, having the durability reduced by 1 made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, like, the draw and win rate for that, and I don't usually pay a lot of attention to draw and win rate, but, like, the mulligan win rate for that was, like, 10 or 15 points higher than the rest of the deck, so something was a little bit broken there, and it just needed to be fixed. That's fine.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, then we have Dragon's Pact for Shaman. Now reads, if you've invoked twice, give them +2/+2 instead of +3/+3.
Which Shaman keeps getting hit, like, over and over and over. It really makes you wonder how, like, any of these cards made it to live. You know, the spoiler with Invocation of Frost, that's 4 cards from, I think, from that one deck, or 5 cards from that one, from the initial deck.
I mean,
6
if you include, Faceless Summoner, which was in the original version, so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's I mean, this was a stupid card from the beginning, Dragon's Pact. Like, 5-6 is, like, I don't like to speak ill of the people who are testing and the people who are designing it, because, like, they have a hard job, especially with this many cards. But, like, 2-5-6s just, like, they must have thought that Shaman was not going to be good enough, because they needed to give it that much of an incentive to do it. But, like, this is the reason that Questruid is almost a deck now, because at least, like, Oasis Surger is, like, legit. Like, it just completely forced Questruid out of the meta, because, like, what are you going to play? You're going to play your 5 drop, and then you're going to trade off one of their 5-6s, and there's still another one left. And now at least you can trade them both off and have 5 ones left over, which is not great, but it's still better than, like, trading off one and using your whole turn to do that. So just, like, there's really nothing that can deal with 2-6 health minions that early other than, like, Plague of Flames. I just don't know why, like, they needed to be, like, that strong. But they must have just thought Galakrond wasn't as good as it was.
Yeah. So, speaking of Shaman as well, Invocation of Frost, mana cost reduced or increased from 1 to 2. So.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is kind of weird, but at the same time, I do understand it. Like, I was basically saying from the start, this is a better Glacial Shard,
yeah,
which was a card that saw a ton of play. So, I get that, you know, you want to nerf something that is stronger than a card that already seen a lot of play, but it also kind of felt like a card that they would skip over. I don't know.
I think it's the spirit of the frog thing that,
yeah,
like, that's the reason. Mm-hmm. Because, like, you could just go, like, Mutator Zap, get one of these, then you get your 2-drop, which is probably Earth and Might. So now you have a 4-3 rusher, and then you're still drawing. And that, at least, I mean, I just saw another Spirit of the Frog list come out today from Impact that's just running more. But it has to run overload cards now. Like, it's running, like, yeah, Storm's Wrath and Zap and Voltaic Burst in order to get the Spirit of the Frog chain going. But before, it was just, like, the Spirit of the Frog chain was just free. And then you draw, like, 4 or 5 cards on turn 4, and then which is all just getting you to your Galakrond closer. So I think it needed to go just to make Spirit of the Frog worse. But, yeah, it's like almost every card of their in that deck got touched, and it's just like, how? Like, how did we get here, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's kind of weird. Like, I understand what you're saying, but I would have rather see Spirit of the Frog get nerfed than Invocation of Frost, because, I mean, even going back to November where we had you know, Evolve Shaman. That card was super problematic in that deck as well. Yeah. But I guess because it's rotating in a few months.
Yeah, and we don't know what they're developing, right? Like, sometimes they make these nerfs because they know what they're making for the next two sets. And there might, and like, once we have rotation, like, Galakrond is the best thing now with six sets. With four sets, it's going to be the next, the best thing by like a country mile. So they probably just needed to tone the strength of it down, just so that once we have rotation, it's just not Galakrond's all slamming into each other like it is right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
So then we have Necrium Apothecary. I cannot pronounce that Apothecary.
It's pronounced BS is what it's pronounced.
Yeah, it is pronounced BS. Mana cost increased from 4 to 5. I saw people playing it like right after the nerf and saying it was still good. I don't see anyone playing it anymore.
No, I've not card
seen it in quite some time.
This card is basically dead from my experience. I'm kind of torn on it because, again, like, it was one of those cards that's like, it basically made the deck as, you know, BS as it was. But at the same time, like, you were warping your entire deck around it to the point where if you didn't draw it, you just lost the game, basically. So I get why it had to be nerfed at this.
I think it's one of those feel bad cards.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's like, it was like the match that lit the dynamite, but like, it was all the other design mistakes from Rogue that were really like, you have Stone Tusk Boar and Deckhand and like a whole bunch of Chargers that are all getting buffed, and then you get to do it again, and you have Ankh of the Buried, and it's like, it's just like, it's not really, like, it didn't really do anything wrong, but it just kind of set everything in motion. But I guess now that it's a turn later, it's also one more chance to draw one of those cards, because you usually don't have that many Death Rattles in your deck. Usually you're only running the two copies of Warbringer, the two copies of Whelp, so if it's one turn later, then it's more likely to draw them out and get less value out of it.
Yeah, I think the card is fine when it was just doing the Whelps. Like, yeah. I think it's perfectly fine. I think where it becomes problematic is when you're, you know, like you said, warping your deck to put in the Stone Test Boars and the South Sea Deck Hands for the Warbringers, you know.
I mean, even just Leeroy, right? Like, if a Leeroy is like a 12-9 or 12-8, I can't do math right now, but, you know, if it's got two buffs on it, like, that's plenty. And a lot of the decks were cutting all the Chargers and just leaving in, like, Leeroy and maybe Deck Hands. I don't even remember they were using, like, Vicious Scale Hides and, like, it was just like, but it just felt terrible to lose that way, because it's just like you're losing a draw on RNG, and that never feels good.
Yeah.
Speaking of feeling bad, Dragon Queen Alexstrasza can no longer generate. It reads summon or generate two other dragons, so no more Dragon Queen into Dragon Queen.
So, thank God, that was so BS.
Yeah.
And somebody made a good point that, like, why doesn't, like, every card that generates cards be like this? You know, like, those change of, like, Flunky into Flunky into Flunky, or the old school Stonehill into Stonehill into Stonehill. Like, all that's just kind of BS. And I wouldn't mind if they just got rid of it altogether, you know? Yeah. But this one in particular, because of how ridiculous the effect is, you get basically another 0-mana 8/8 that gives you another two mana dragons, which is just, it's stupid.
And you can still chain. It's just you have to get it from one of the Discover Dragon cards, which then you're paying full price for it again, which is a little bit more fair. Not much, but a little bit.
I was going to say, if you discover it off of, you know, a Lackey or something else, like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of dragons in the pool, so...
I mean, when you're getting it off the 4/8 taunt, it feels a little bit worse, but the 4/8 taunt, but, you know, that's fine. Like, that, you still have high rolls, and it's still a fine card. It's just not going to, like, completely, like, build a board on its own anymore like it used to.
Precisely. So, and then we just got other Battleground nerfs, or balances, excuse me. So, if you're into Battlegrounds, you can go ahead and read about them, so...
I have no idea what they are because I don't play Battlegrounds.
Yeah. I
tried to play a couple times. I got like 5th place in all of them and I rage quit and that was it. So it's, you know, I need to pay Boticus to coach me or something.
Yeah, I've done decently when I've been done doing it, but I just like TFT way more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I kind of always have to, so it's not worth it getting angry.
Yeah.
That's fair. So then we have Galcron's Awakening Cinematic has come out. We got the pre-order bundle up, which is just a golden pack and a couple card backs. So, I mean, I guess you're going to spend $20 on the adventure if you want to, or it's, I think it's 700 gold a wing. So
I just want to jump in real quick, because this really pisses me off, to be honest. Like, I get having adventures, you know? Like, when we were having them instead of expansions, it was kind of meh, but fine. You know, you save up your gold for a couple months, and then you buy it, and then you have probably a little bit left over to keep buying new packs or the next set of packs that come out. This is in the middle. A lot of people haven't had time to save up enough gold to buy this. And if they have, that means that they're not having that gold to spend for the next expansion. So this is going to be a mandatory thing to buy if you want to be like somewhat competitive. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to bite into either you have to shell out $20 or you have to pay, or else you're not going to get like 30 extra packs for the next expansion. And that just really rubs me the wrong way.
You know what, though? That's always been the case with these. That's why I've never liked them in the first place. Like, even back when we were doing, like Karazhan and Naxxramas, like, I mean, you know, with the three of us where we are now with our collections, we would be able to save up that gold if it was in place of an expansion and then just buy it. But, like, when you're, like, a player with a growing collection, it's you basically have to spend the money anyway, because like you get such poor return for gold as opposed to just paying the $20 and just getting the cards that it's almost always worth. Like, I think I tried to save up gold for like Black Rock Mountain or Naxxramas when I was first playing, and it was miserable because I was giving up on I was wasting so much gold on that I could be spending on packs. And then when League of Explorers came out, I just said screw it, I'll just pay the $20 because
Just for reference, right? Like, it's going to cost you, I think it's, like, it says $20, right?
Yeah.
Or 700 gold per wing, and it gives you 35 cards. You could use that 2,800 gold to buy, you know, 28 packs, you know, like, and that's 140 cards.
But counterpoint of that is, like, how many of those are duplicates? How many of those are playable? Like, you know, you at least know you're getting all the cards by paying the money for these, for the adventure, versus like hoping that you're going to get, say, a Kronx out of a pack of Descent of Dragons. So it's you're getting less, but you know what you're getting at least, which is why a lot of people have tended to like these things in the past, because they knew that they would be spending that money, but they would be getting cards that would be used, as opposed to like rolling the dice on a pack and hoping you were going to get a legendary and having it turn out to be like, I don't know, Lady in White or whatever the worst legendary is.
It's the LGC philosophy against the TCG.
Yeah.
So that's for those of you who don't know, it's a living card game, which is like a trading card game, except for every time an expansion comes out, you pay a flat price. They give you a one playset of everything that comes out. So it's like Netrunner, Call of Cthulhu, those kinds of games. I know there's more out there now, and I haven't been keeping up with any of them. But
yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument to be made that like all the single player content up to now has been like optional. Like, if you really like Tombs of Terror or you want the card packs that go along with it, then you can pay the money and get it, or you can pay the gold and get it. This is more or less mandatory if you're going to be playing competitively.
Yeah, I haven't purchased any of the adventures this year because it's not worth it.
Right.
From a gold to packs perspective, this is 100% mandatory, and that's why I'm kind of frustrated about this. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm annoyed at it. Like, I'm going to buy it, but I'm annoyed at it because they're like, they basically said after the last adventure that they weren't going to do this again, and it's just going to be three expansions. And then this year they start charging for the adventures after they gave them away for free for a year.
Yeah.
So it's like,
on top of that, annoying. On top of that, just I don't want to go off too far, but like, with the exception of Descent of Dragons, Team 5 has done a pretty good job at balancing the expansions. Saviors of Voldoom was pretty good. Rise of Shadows or whatever it was pretty good. They just suck. Historically, they suck at these small adventures.
These like meta shake-up things. Yeah.
Yeah, so like the last two that we had, Doom in the Tombs and The Rise of Max, were both horrendously bad.
Yeah.
In terms of balancing. And then when you go back even further to the past adventures, none of them have been balanced, you know? Naxxramas, we had Undertaker. You know, if people remember that, how horrendously... the most busted deck in the history of Hearthstone, you know? Blackrock Mountain, you know, remember Grim Patron and Emperor Thorazen, which just came back. How disgusting those cards were. Even what people seem to like the League of Explorers. People like that adventure. But that gave you Finley. It gave you Reno. It gave you Tunnotrog. Like, yeah. I have zero faith that this is actually going to be balanced. And I'm expecting another balance patch after this. Because
sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, and I don't want to be too down on it. Like, I'm keeping an open mind. But, like, and the reason that they stopped doing the adventures is they said, when you're making a small number of cards that are intended to shake up the meta, you need to shoot higher in order for them to have an impact, especially when you have, like, six sets worth of cards. And, like, when you're shooting for, like, a 7 when you're building a normal set, you might hit an 8 or a 9, and that's okay. When you're shooting for a 9, you might hit an 11, right? So that's gotcha. where the problem is, and that's where I got worried, and that's where the buffs and the wild cards are, because they shot for a 9, and then we ended up with Evolve, and we ended up with Pocket Galaxy. And, you know, that's something that is worrisome. Now, I hope that they're learning a little bit better. I'm hoping that they designed them along with this set, and maybe that's why this set felt unbalanced, because we didn't have these 35 cards in it yet. That's a possibility. But, yeah, it's a little bit worrisome given how the last two have gone. So, and I'm at least hopeful, because of how quickly they've been willing to fix things now, that they won't let things go for 2 months like they did with Evolve, because they have Battlegrounds. But it's like, we're finally going to get, hopefully, a meta that's stable, and then, okay, well, here's 35 new cards, so we can break everything again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's look at... so, we've gotten four cards revealed so far. Reno and three other ones. I did not write them down.
It is Reno, Shotbot, Dark Prophecy, and Chaos Gazer. Chaos Gazer is a 3-mana, 4/3 Warlock card that... Battlecry, corrupt a playable card in your opponent's hand. They have one turn to play it. So it's kind of like that discard mechanic, but it will only target a playable card in their hand. So they will have a chance to play it. It's not going to, like, target, you know, Dragon Queen Alexstrasza on, like, turn 3, which is kind of annoying. Like, I think it would have been pretty cool if it targeted any card, but I guess they don't want that feels bad feeling that discard can give. Dark Prophecy, priest card, 3-mana. Discover a 2-cost minion, summon it, and give it +3 health. That actually seems pretty decent. The question is, I don't know any minion-based priest decks besides Resurrect Priest, and that... yeah.
I mean, getting a three drop with a big button combo priest might be something you want.
But at the same time, that deck still plays Psycho Pomp.
Yeah.
And if that dies, if you, like, get a River Croc and it dies, and then you resummon a River Croc with Psycho Pomp, that's really, you know, poor.
Yeah. I mean, it's really a matter of, like, what are we losing from Combo Priest in rotation, right? Because I don't know that this is necessarily a card for now, but that might be a card that would slot into Combo Priest, like, after rotation, potentially.
Well, Psycho Pomp, the Tolvia, the Nephroset, Injured Blade Master's classic. You know, I think pretty much all these cards are either classic or were this year.
Rise of Shadows, yeah.
Yeah, it's like extra arms that we're losing. So maybe you slot that in. If you were running extra arms, maybe you'd slot that in. Or Topsy Turvy, which is not, that's not really going to help you there. But yeah, like a lot of them are. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's a weird card. And I think they're trying to, they need to figure out Priest's identity. But that's a no, that's a whole like 2-hour discussion.
I would love for them to do something with rotation and like Hall of Fame stuff and change stuff and actually give Priest a way to play the game that's not just Inner Fire or, you know, they can't mind blast anymore, but that used to be it. Yeah. Or just resurrect everything, because that's a horrible mechanic and I wish they would let that die.
Yeah. I mean, the 30-second version of this is that they've designed all of the classic and basic cards around, like, what they did in Warcraft. And these classes are doing very different things in Hearthstone now than they did in Warcraft. But, like, the ones that where that translated really well, like Warrior and Rogue, those classes are always good. Something like Priest, where they couldn't or Shaman, where they couldn't figure out, like, how to get Warcraft to translate. Then you have weird stuff like Shadow Form and Mind Games and crap like that that you can't make a deck out of.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, sorry. The third card is Shotbot Paladin, 2 mana, 2/2 mech with Reborn. So that's kind of interesting in the sense that you can magnetic stuff onto it. But magnetic is leaving at during rotation, pretty much. I think all of them are. Because that was a boomsday project mechanic. So
yep. I mean, it's reverse shielded minibot, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I mean, shielded minibot was a card we played. So I figure that we'll probably find a place for this. Like, it's just a good 2-drop for Paladin when Paladin really has nothing going on right now. So I mean, you know, it can't hurt.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured about it too.
And Mech Paladin's sort of a thing with Skyclaw, right? So that could kind of fit into there too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I do think that it is it's definitely a strong card. It's just, I don't know if Mech Paladin will be playable, but it might be playable, like, after rotation.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Amazing Reno, which is a mage hero card. So it kind of looks like all the explorers are going to get their own hero card as well. Reno is a 10 mana card that has the battle cry, make all minions disappear, poof, along with the 5 armor.
I just love the poof.
And this poof means that they cannot be resurrected, they cannot be, their death rattles don't go off.
So they're exiled, essentially. Yeah. If you're basically looking at terms from another game, yeah, they're exiled.
Or if you're old like me and played in the 90s, buried.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
And then the passive, the new hero power is a passive one that says at the start of your turn, cast a random spell.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of competitive players like freaking the heck out about the hero power and like oh, it's gonna change matches. It's gonna be too much RNG. Like that is literally the downside of playing this card. Like, you're getting a 10 mana unconditional board wipe. Like, the downside is A, that it costs 10 mana, and B, you're going to be doing random things that you're not going to be able to account for the rest of the game, and you probably don't want that, because one spell a turn is not like 10 spells at once from Yogg's puzzle box. Like, one spell a turn can be really good or really bad, but you don't have, like, the rest of them to get it to regress out to the mean. So, yeah, there's going to be some RNG. It's gonna swing some games, but I think in general, like, one spell doesn't generally have that much of an impact. Like, sometimes you'll just get, like, Shadow Word Pain when there are no small minions on the board, and then that'll just be it. And sometimes you'll get a Twisting Nether when you just built up a huge board, and you know, but that's kind of the cost of playing a card like this, and it's going to factor into when you play it. Do you want to take that on? Is this board worth it?
My question is, it worth playing? Like, oh, yeah. I understand that. Okay.
Yeah. In Highlander Mage, 100% you play this. You don't have any, like, Mage does not have any big board wipes. Like, the best board wipe that it has is like Frost Nova Doomsayer. Other than that, it can't clear a wide board of big minions. So this is the only way that it has to do that. So you probably will run it in Highlander Mage. You'll just take the risk.
I mean, historically, one of the biggest counters to Mage has been like Token Druid, because they can't deal with a board plus Soul of the Forest, which this can. Do think it's kind of interesting. Like, I do think that this hero power is better than the quest, the Mage quest reward, where you like you for 2 mana you generate a spell and it just got added to your hand. I think just randomly playing a spell is better, and it's kind of sad at how bad that quest is.
Yeah. I guess the flip side is you at least when you're generating the spell and putting it in your hand, you get to choose when it goes off. Like, you're not here, exactly. You're not going to choose what you're gonna have something going off every turn. Like, if you've ever played like Book of Wonders or Scroll of Wonders, I forget what the hell the stupid card is.
Yeah.
Like
Scroll of Wonders.
Yeah, yep. Then you know what that's like, and you know, having it just go off and not knowing when and what it's gonna do and be able what to target it does make a big difference, but it probably still is better than just putting cards in your hand.
It's going to lead to some good trolling videos.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
Okay, so that's all we have so far on Galakrond's Awakening. So let's talk about the meta and the real winner of the patch, Rogue.
Surprise, you know, it's not like anybody saw this coming.
Yeah.
Rogue is just absolutely insane. There are three main ways, kind of, to play. Malakos is kind of fringe, but it is the best combo deck out there right now, you know, which makes Holy Wrath Paladin even more sad.
Especially because it straight up counters Holy Wrath Paladin and basically makes it unplayable with the amount of rogues that are on ladder right now.
Yeah, really.
Feels bad.
But the two main ways, I guess, they're both Galakrond Rogue. It's just the Highlander or not version. And there's a bit of variation within them. I know Zacko had one with Life Drinkers. The version I was playing was doing the questing.
It's Fear of the Sharks, the other way you can go with that. Zed was at High Legend with that.
Yeah. And then the other option, like I said, Highlander, it's, you know, less consistency. You're less likely to get the fully upgraded Galakrond, but then you have access to something like Dragon Queen, Alexstrasza, and Zephyrus. I do want to say in the mirror, like, or in the Galakrond versus Highlander Galakrond, I think the Galakrond is far superior.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying both the decks. I mean, I took Highlander to Legend last month. I've been trying to play the Galakrond list because that's clearly like the new hotness, and it feels like the Highlander list can't generally get as much out of the Galakrond, but it has beefier cards, so it gets more value out of the zero cost cards that it does draw. Like the, you know, getting a zero mana Siamat or Dragon Queen Alexstrasza is generally a lot more powerful than like the Eviscerates and SI7s, but since you have all that extra burn in the Galakrond list, you can generally just use that to finish off your opponent along with the claw, as opposed to needing that to like just generate a big board and then capitalize from there.
Yeah, I do also think that the amount of damage that just Galakrond Rogue can do is absolutely insane. With just a single coin that you can get from the Skulker, you can deal 18 damage with Leroy Double Shadow Step.
Yeah.
I've won so many games just by doing that. And, you know, you just have to deal like 12 damage to the Galakrond to the Highlander, because they don't have a lot of heal, you know. They get that 5 armor from Galakrond, and sometimes they run Zilliax, but it's not hard to deal that much damage to a rogue over the course of a game. And, you know, if you have the Leroy and a Shadow Step in hand, you know, it's not a big ask to just hold one of them. And, you know, having that 18 damage win condition.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not to mention you're going to generate 3 free cards from Togwaggle, and you're generate 2 to 4 cards with Galakrond, not to mention the claw.
Yeah. There's so many. If you're not planning on doing like the Leroy 18 damage, I love to use that Shadow Step on Togwaggle. So you get like 2 Wondrous Wands, and there's a, you know, reasonable chance that either gives you a Kronx or Galakrond for free, which gives you more 0 mana cards. It's just it's a ridiculous amount of 0 mana cards, and this is one of the things that I said at the start, like during the reveal. Cards that should like have a mana cost shouldn't cost 0. You know, like it's ridiculous, and the amount of that that's available to Rogue is ridiculous, and you know, all these cards are gonna be around for another year. So get used to it, I guess.
Yeah. I think I would be remiss if I didn't mention a little bit of the fun factor with the Highlander list, though, because it is a more varied list, and you run the Burgle cards. So you get, it's a lot more like you're playing improv rather than Like, the Galakrond list is very straightforward. It's more of, like, an aggressive deck. Like, you know exactly what you're going to be doing. The Highlander deck is much more, like, you're figuring it out on the fly. And there was one night last week where Mage of Death was playing it, and I think I was hiding from the children because they were having a sleepover or something. So I ended up jumping in a call with him, and we got Dragon's Horde on turn one. This got us on Trolden this week.
Yeah, yep. I saw the video.
so
da, da, da,
yeah, so
da.
So we got,
I love that Jurassic Park music.
Yeah, so we got Dragon's Horde on one, which gave us Dino Tamer Brand, which was live because we're playing Highlander list, and then on six we play Spirit of the Shark into Dino Tamer Brand on seven, got two King Crushes, and then Shadow Stepped the Dino Tamer Brand, and our opponent was did not stay in that game for very much longer. So you can get some of those like combo mass hysteria with that.
What? Yeah, he cast mass hysteria,
and it didn't quite clear everything.
Didn't clear the shark was the big thing. Yeah. So the shark was still there.
Yeah, I think the two dinosaurs like bounce into each other. We still have the shark, so we could do another 16 the next turn. They were like, "Oh, screw this, I'm out."
The appropriate response. So what are you playing if you're not playing Rogue? Like, what are you playing to beat Rogue right now?
The biggest thing that I've been seeing outside of Rogues has been Warrior. Galakrond Warrior is still very strong, despite the Zion nerf. And it does a pretty decent job against Rogue, especially the nine the version that doesn't have Zilliacs, I guess, or Life Drinkers. There's a lot of face damage you can do with the amount of invoking that Warrior does. And that adds up very, very quickly against Rogue. But if the game is... If you're not being super aggressive with the Rogue, or against the Rogue, I should say, and, you know, you're doing a lot of minion combat and stuff, the Rogue is just going to absolutely blow you out.
Yeah.
If you let it go to late game at all, then the Rogue just wins almost every single time. You have to win by, like, turn six, basically, as the Warrior. And in that same vein, you know, aggro decks like Face Hunter does quite a good job against it, for the same reason that there's, you know, a lot of damage coming in very, very quickly and very little heal in the side of the Rogue.
Yeah, the Galakrond Warlock's not bad against it. It's not a great matchup, but you have a lot of healing.
Really?
Yeah, once you get used to it, you have to know how to play the deck, but... Like, you have a lot of healing and you go wide a lot. If you generally what you're trying to do is speedrun your own Galakrond and beat them to it. And so if you can catch them, you have to kind of catch them without a good curve. Like, because that deck, when you get to that point, really does rely on getting the Galakrond or the Togwaggle. And sometimes they're just not there. Like, every once in a while, it actually doesn't have Galakrond. I know it's hard to believe, but... So you actually do have a chance to counter pressure, and you can also heal a lot. Like, there's a surprising amount of healing in the Galakrond Warlock deck between the Nether Breaths and the Sacrificial Pacts and Galakrond itself and the Kronks. Like, you can heal a lot, and if they stall out, which they sometimes do when they don't find card draw, then you can sometimes just kind of build a big board of your own that they can't answer, and you can beat them with it. But it's a much more even matchup, probably a little bit unfavored, but it's not as bad as you would think it is.
That's very interesting. Sorry, I don't want to cut you off, but when I was doing my Climb to Legend with Rogue, I don't know what the exact split was between like Zoo and Galakrond Warlock. I do think that it was at least 5-2 for Galakrond Warlock, but I went 7-0 against Warlock, and then as soon as I hit Legend, I played the Galakrond Warlock, and I went like 0-3 against Rogue. So
yeah.
I think it's extremely rogue favored in that.
It's definitely rogue favored, but it's not. It's still a good deck in general. And like I've run up against enough rogues where you can win that matchup. You have to play it a certain way, but you can win that matchup. But it's not as easy as like something like I think like Quest Druid maybe can get there sometimes just with the amount of healing and taunt and everything that gets in the way. But Quest Druid just isn't as good against everything else. So.
Yeah, I saw 4 druids in my climb, and all of them were token, and all of them were victories, because it does very good against that kind of deck. I do remember from last really expansion poorly. That Quest Rogue was a very strong counter to, Tempo Rogue, I guess, is what it was. I don't think that including the Galakrond, really changes it that much. I would expect it to be still a strong matchup, but I haven't seen any Quest Rogues even after the nerfs.
Yeah. Oh, the Burgle.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Quest Druids. Excuse me.
Oh, Quest Druids. Yeah. I mean, they're starting to get there. I saw one hit top 10, and people are trying it. It's not great, but I mean, anything that's got more or less a finite amount of damage, and especially if it needs to go through taunts, like that's got a lot of taunts and it's got a lot of healing, and it can sometimes just, if it gets a good draw, again, it all kind of depends on if the rogue finds Galakrond or not. If it finds Galakrond on 7, it's probably winning, but sometimes it's those games where it doesn't find it right away and it doesn't have the draw to get there. Those are the games where sometimes like a slower deck that has a lot of healing and taunt can kind of, you know, wear it down.
Yeah, I want to say that they do need to be aware of the 18 damage.
Yeah.
Because, like, there have been plenty of games that I've beat Galakrond Warlock where it's like, I'm at 16, I'm safe. And it's like, no, you're not.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I've seen my share of just playing today. I've been playing Galakrond Rogue, and I've seen Quest Druid, and it just seems like you can pressure him out. The Quest Druid's real weakness is you can pressure him out of the game super early.
Yeah, you can.
And they have to play catch up the whole game, and then you just keep smacking them until they're dead. They're dead by turn 6 or 7.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it depends. It's all draw dependent. It's like sometimes if they get like hit an Oasis into Ferocious Howl, like that's enough for them to stabilize long enough. But yeah, you definitely have a big window to be able to punch them in the face, and then sometimes they just can't come back from it.
The biggest way I found, at least last expansion, the way that the rogue can win is Giant Edwin on turn 3. If you don't have, basically, don't have the Giant Edwin on turn 3 or at the latest turn 4, there's basically no chance that you win. I don't know how much that's changed with the new expansion and after like the 2 sets of nerfs, because I just haven't faced any questers, but just based off my experience from last expansion, that was the main way that you won as the rogue.
Yeah.
Versus Quest Druid.
Yep. So, Warrior and your aggro desk. How is Zoo faring against Rogue?
Horrendous. It's always been a horrendous matchup.
Zoo's like a non-deck. Same reason with the token. Now.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's the same reason why Token Druid is so bad. Like, they have the backstabs, they have the seal fates, they have all the lackeys. You know, 0 mana cards, you generally have enough time to play a Galakrond or a Togwaggle, especially if you get a Titanic Lackey to give you an extra taunt, you know, and then you just blow, you basically are playing defense up until one turn where you just blow them the heck out, and they don't have a response after that. Once they lose the board, they lose completely.
Yeah.
And it's hard for Rogue to do that.
Especially with Flick Skyshift.
Oh, yes.
Like, that's nice board of treants you have there. And they're dead.
Yeah.
And I bounce them back. So go ahead. Please rebuild the board with treants, please. I'd love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just looking at HS replay just to see. It looks like it's like 47.5% against Quest Druid, the Galakrond Rogue, and like even against Galakrond Warlock, according to their stats. So.
Interesting.
Yeah, Highlander Hunter and Face Hunter, it's also slightly on favor against, but none of these matchups are deep red. They're all like 47%, 48%, 49%. Like, apparently, like, Quest Hunter's like the worst possible matchup. I don't even understand why that would be, but I mean, you're not playing Quest Hunter in this meta, probably. I mean, I guess some people are, but you're not. That's not a thing you really want to be doing.
No, probably not.
I'm just trying to think. Yeah, I've had harder times around the Highlander Hunter. So
yeah, I mean, that is a bad matchup, because especially if they have Bran on 7, it's very hard to win that. Because again, lots of face damage. I'm noticing a trend here.
Yeah,
exactly.
But especially if they don't have Bran on 7, or if their curve is just a little bit weird, it's not. It's I would definitely like say it's like even.
Yeah. Yeah. I was playing some Highlander Hunter on ladder today. It's in a weird spot. It feels like it's got all the same stuff, but it's not quite there. So I don't know.
Are you running secrets or no?
Oh, yeah, you have to, because you just need it for the draw more than anything else. I don't think you could really play a Highlander Hunter without secrets at this point.
Okay, so when... So I didn't really think about this till just this moment. So when Subject 9 goes away...
Oh, yeah. That's going to be that's going to be rough for Highlander Hunter after that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because that's draw 5 cards from your deck and get to the good ones faster. I mean, the phase, the 2-mana 2/3 that puts a secret in play when you use your hero powers, all right, too.
Yeah, so. Yeah, but I mean, that's still, there's, you only have one of those, it's only drawing out maybe one secret because it's going to die immediately, and yeah, it's not going to be, it's not going to be the same as like pulling all those bad draws out of your deck and just making the rest of it fire.
Anything to wrap up the conversation about rogues and roguelike decks?
I don't think so. I think, surprisingly, Priest has been a tough matchup, but I just hate Priest so much. And it does get solved a little bit easier when you do include the saps. Like, I was playing... I started with my deck... I just took the most popular list off HS Replay, played like 2 or 3 games, and one of them was against Priest. I'm like, why can't I beat this guy? Oh, I don't have sap.
Yeah.
Let me just fix that real quick.
Yeah, and I guess the sap makes it really good, because I'm looking at those stats just at Legend. It's like 70% for the Galakrond Rogue against the Priest. So
it's disgustingly. I mean, that's always been the thing. I hate sap. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know, sap is my least favorite card in the entire goddamn game because of how absolutely busted it is. And I want to see that card, like, Hall of Famed or something, because it is disgusting. It is disgusting. Oh,
yeah. It is a nasty, nasty boy. also, real quick, while we're talking about this, does anyone like playing Priest? Because I have not seen anyone, like, everyone I've seen on Twitter is like, God, I hate playing against Priest. Does anyone actually like playing Priest, or is it just
have the Priest main here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not playing it right now because it's just like some of the matchups are just so one-sided. Most of the matchups are like completely one-sided. It's like either you win. Like, I was playing that for like a day or two after the first set of nerfs when everybody was playing Face Hunter, and I would just sit there with like a condescending Wonka face on and like, oh, that's cute. Yeah, go play your Leper Gnomes. That's fine. I'm just going to heal up another 10. But, like, you either, like, completely win and it just takes you 20 minutes, or you just get blown out and there's literally nothing you can do. And like, I like Priest. I hate Resurrect Priest. Like, yes. I hate it. I like, the two Priest archetypes that we have are Combo and Resurrect Priest, and it's, like, enough. Like, I appreciate that they tried with the Galakrond. Like, I don't know... how that was like how like every other class gets a broken Galakrond but Priest, and it's like and it's like
God,
and it might be better after rotation, because like a lot of the really bad minions are from like the sets that are rotating out. Like if you look at the minions that it got from the last 3 sets, they're a lot better. Like you get a lot more Sandhoof water bearers and Convincing Infiltrators and Katrina Muertes and stuff like that, and a lot less like Test Subjects and sand whatever the stupid thing is that makes 1/1 zombies when you cast a spell and stuff like that, and like quartz elementals. Yeah.
I understand that, but at the same time I fundamentally disagree. I don't think that Galakrond like
Oh, I didn't say it was going to be good. I said it was going to be better.
I don't think it will ever be playable.
I didn't say that.
I think it will be
and I'm just going back to my
so horrendously bad.
Yeah.
That no, Galakrond Priest will always be the wrong decision to play. Like, yeah,
I mean, it's like it's giving you a card that you can maybe play in 4 or 5 turns, as opposed to like a like everything else either affects the board or it's a lackey, which you can generally play right then. And it's like, okay, well, these minions need to be bombs, and like some of them are, more of them in the newer sets, but still, it's expensive, and you're not gonna be able to run Princess Talanji anymore, which would be the way that you would like capitalize on it if you were going to. And, like, it's just, like, there's not really a plan there other than just, like, playing dumb bodies and hoping that that's enough. And compared to, like, even just the 1/1s, like, there's ways to take advantage of that in the Galakrond Warlock, like, the Sack Pact and the Plague of Flames. There's not really a good way to take advantage of just, like, a bunch of big dumb idiots that you're putting down on the board as a priest.
Yeah, I think the Galakrond priest would have been good like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It will not be good in this kind of environment that Hearthstone has created. And I think that part of the problem, we don't want to go too far into the priest rabbit hole, but they haven't been able to make a good minion-based priest since Mean Streets of Gadgetzan.
Well, Spiteful Summoner.
Okay, true. That's fair.
Yeah.
So I think there's been two, and the entire history of Hearthstone that I can think of. And that's what the hero power is supposed to be for, and they just can't figure it out. If you had, almost half the... Sorry, I don't know what I'm trying to say. But, the priest hero power in most games is absolutely useless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's the only hero power you can't use on turn two, usually. Or if you are, you're in bad shape. And the problem is that, the way that you take advantage of that hero power is by healing up minions and giving them toughness. Yeah. The problem is that they printed Divine Spirit and Inner Fire and they won't do anything about it. Because anytime that you go too far in that direction, then you have Divine Spirit Inner Fire kill you, and that's a bad play pattern. So it's they don't give a priest enough ways to take advantage of that. And then until they give them too many, and then you have Combo Priest. So it's they need to deal with Divine Spirit, first of all, and just make that not a thing, and then figure out a way to make that a little bit more I would love to see and if I was designing a card, which I'm not qualified to do, but something whatever the druid card was that you gave it plus one attack and then gained armor equal to its attack, I would love to see something like that with healing and toughness. Yeah. For
Earthen priests. Scales or
Earthen Scales, yeah.
Earthen Scales, yeah.
But toughness instead of attack and healing instead of armor would make a lot of sense, right? But they can't really do those things because all of a sudden now you have Divine Spirit, Inner Fire, you're dead, and whenever they go too far over that line, then that's the only thing you see in the meta, what we had at the end of Old Doom. So I don't know.
So my prediction, I've already made this on air, is that they're going to Hall of Fame Inner Fire. I think
they would have to be Divine Spirit. Fire. It would have to be Divine Spirit because there are other ways you can do it with a crazed alchemist.
Yeah, and we had Topsy Turvy also. I mean, Topsy Turvy's rotating, but yeah,
but just rotating.
Yeah, you need.
Just put crazed alchemist and Inner Fire in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
no one else is using crazed alchemist. Well, and yes, that go ahead.
Well, I mean, the thing is that you need to have Inner Fire because you need to have some way to capitalize, get a payoff from investing in the toughness of your minions, right? The problem is Divine Spirit makes it too easy. It makes it easy to just turn it into an OTK. You should be able to keep playing Powered Shield and those types of things on a minion, make it big, and then turn it into a big threat. That's a thing that priests should be able to do. It just, Divine Spirit makes it too easy.
Just as an aside, I think it would be really cool if you added text to Divine Spirit, which says, and this minion can't be targeted by spells or heroes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Give it that. And that,
that would be insane. That's the last thing you can do to it.
Yeah.
Or maybe not maybe you can still target it with the hero power so you can keep healing it.
Yeah.
But making it not being able to target it by spells would kind of solve most of these problems, I think. Because you could still have a strong minion and be something that you want to heal.
Well, spells and battle cries, right? Because we still have Crazed Alchemist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, they'd have to change a lot of wording and stuff for that to work.
So this goes back to my original question. Is anyone having fun playing Priest right now?
Not right now, no. Not right now.
Exactly. That was my original question.
I mean, Zedalot is.
Yeah.
Well. He's happy Leroy Gravrune OTKing people, but everybody else, no.
That's fair.
I think he's just insane. So,
yeah.
All right. So that's going to wrap it up for this week. So I came up with a poll question. It's usually Mage. So since he's not here this week, the poll question is, which League of Explorer character card do you think will be the best? So, and it's obviously Reno, Bran, Elise, and Finley. So we'll see what everyone thinks about that. And I mean, I don't know when the rest of them are going to be revealed, but there's only one out right now. So we still have a good shot in the dark at the time when this is going to go up, unless there's another one that comes up before I post it. So, So you can find the show on Twitter at Dr3HS. You can join our Discord as the top pinned tweet on our Twitter. You can email the show at Dr3HS@gmail.com. And you can find me at Daring Alkaline. Nikolais?
You can find me on Twitter at Nikolais123.
And Mage, where can we find you and Off Curve?
Well, I'm not Mage, but...
I mean, it's got... Yeah.
It's okay.
I even have it written down as Wicked Good.
That's okay.
So Wicked Good.
We're yes. actually the same person. That's why you've never seen us in the same place at the same time. But, you know...
Except that Trollden video.
Except in the Trollden video when it was gone and other things that completely invalidate that statement. Yeah, but... So you can find... If you can... You can subscribe to my podcast, Off Curve, which I record... in my car on my way home from work. It's usually about 35-40 minutes or whatever I'm thinking about talking about the time. Sometimes it's a deck guide, sometimes it's, you know, well, lately it's been like a nerf analysis like every other week, but you know, that's hopefully not for too much longer. And you can also find me on Twitter at Wicked Good, and I stream Monday nights at 8 p.m Eastern at twitch.tv/wickedgoodfm.
Awesome. And thank you, Steve, for coming by tonight. We really appreciate it. Go check out Off Curve if you have not listened to it. Amazing podcast, and you have great insight. Follow him on Twitter, too. You get infographics and real, like, data analysis, since that's what you do for a living anyways.
Yeah, so if you go on my site, I have, if you play in the Masters Tour qualifiers, I collect all the data from all of the Masters Tour qualifiers from Battlefy, and I do a dashboard that I update usually twice a weekend, which has lineup frequency, it has deck frequency, deck win rates, lineup win rates, band statistics, matchup statistics between the decks. Pretty much, if it's not there, then I would probably like to know what it is so that I can add it. And if it's not already yep. there, but there's a lot of data there, and I've been working on it for over a year now with Posca from No Pros Here. He does the meta report, I do the data, and it's really... It seems to like a tool like a lot of people are finding a lot of value of, and I enjoy making it for people. So,
I mean, it's a tool that the casters use during the cast. Yeah. I've seen multiple times where they mention Steve because of this. So, you know your stuff.
Yeah.
So we really appreciate you taking your time this evening to come out and help us out.
Yeah.
And as always, guys, you've been listening to Dr. 3.